Welcome to the Be Freed podcast, where we distill the world's best sources into personalized insights you can actually use. I'm Naya, joined by my co-host Jackson. Today, we're tackling something I think we've all struggled with: how to learn new skills faster without getting stuck in tutorial purgatory.
I'm Jackson, and I'm so excited about today's topic. Whether you're trying to pick up coding, a language, or even pickleball, there's this weird paradox. We have unlimited access to tutorials, yet making real progress feels harder than ever. We're going to break down the science-backed shortcuts that actually work.
Exactly. We've pulled insights from neuroscience research, top books like Make It Stick and Atomic Habits, and expert voices like Andrew Huberman and Josh Kaufman. Let's help everyone break through that skill plateau.
Jackson read in a clear, articulate, steady voice, like a professor. You know what fascinates me about skill acquisition? Most people quit before they even give themselves a chance. Josh Kaufman's research shows that the steepest part of the learning curve, going from knowing nothing to basic competence, takes just 20 hours of deliberate practice.
Only 20 hours? That seems surprisingly low. I've definitely spent more time than that just watching YouTube tutorials without making much progress.
That's exactly the problem. The key is how you spend those hours. Kaufman breaks it down into a simple framework. First, define exactly what success looks like. Not vague goals like learn Spanish, but specific ones like order a meal confidently in Spanish by next month.
I love that specificity. I think I failed at learning guitar 3 times because my goal was just learn guitar, which means nothing and everything at the same time.
Right. The second step is deconstructing the skill into sub-skills. For guitar, that might be chord transitions, strumming patterns, and reading tablature. Then you identify which sub-skills give you the biggest performance boost and focus there first, the 80-20 principle.
That makes so much sense. So instead of trying to master everything at once, I should focus on the few chord progressions that let me play simple songs?
Exactly. And Kaufman's final steps are removing barriers to practice and committing to those 20 hours. Most people never reach the enjoyable phase because they quit during the awkward beginning stage.
I've always been curious. Why do some things I learn stick while others vanish immediately? I spent hours highlighting textbooks in college, but I can barely remember what was in them.
That's because highlighting and rereading are actually terrible learning strategies. A landmark 2013 review by cognitive scientist John Dunlosky and colleagues compared popular study methods and passive reviewing ranked at the bottom.
Wait, seriously? That's what most of us were taught to do.
I know. The science is clear. Testing yourself beats reviewing every time. In a classic experiment by Karpik and Rotiger, students who practice retrieving information from memory outperformed those who kept restudying by a massive margin when tested a week later.
So instead of rereading my notes on Spanish vocabulary, I should close the book and try to recall the words from memory?
Precisely. And here's the counterintuitive part. The struggle to remember actually strengthens the neural pathways. When you make errors and correct them, that's where the real learning happens. Andrew Huberman calls this the error window, the sweet spot where you're challenged but not overwhelmed.
That reminds me of Carol Dweck's work on growth mindset, reframing challenges as opportunities rather than threats.
Absolutely connected. Dweck's research shows that people who view intelligence as buildable rather than fixed are more likely to persist through difficulties. Her simple reframe of adding yet to I can't do this changes everything about how we approach learning.
So we've established that testing yourself works better than reviewing, but what about those cram sessions before exams? I always felt like marathon study sessions were effective.
That's the fascinating thing. They feel effective in the moment, but the research tells a different story. Two powerful techniques consistently outperform cramming: spacing and interleaving.
Can you break those down?
Spacing means distributing your practice over time instead of bunching it together. A meta-analysis across hundreds of studies found that 3 20-minute sessions on different days beats 1 60-minute session for long-term retention.
That makes sense intuitively. What about interleaving?
Interleaving means mixing different types of problems or skills within a practice session rather than doing one type at a time. For example, if you're learning math, don't do 20 area problems, then 20 perimeter problems. Instead, mix them together.
That sounds harder.
It is harder, and that's exactly why it works. When problems are interleaved, your brain has to first identify what type of problem it is, then select the appropriate strategy. That extra cognitive work creates stronger, more flexible learning. A study with math students found that those who practiced with mixed problem sets performed 40% better on a delayed test than those who practiced in blocks.
So the techniques that feel most difficult during practice, retrieving from memory, spacing out sessions, mixing problem types, are actually the most effective for long-term learning?
Exactly. Learning isn't about what feels easy in the moment. It's about what creates lasting change in your brain.
Naya read in a relatable, casual, empathetic voice, like a best friend who just gets you.
Like what? I'm picturing those scenes in movies where someone learns kung fu overnight.
Not quite that fast, but sleep is incredibly powerful. Research by Roche and Bourne shows that memory systems actively replay and strengthen during sleep, especially during slow wave and REM phases. That's why something you struggled with at night often feels easier the next morning.
So pulling an all-nighter before a presentation is actually counterproductive?
Completely. Andrew Huberman emphasizes that sleep isn't optional. It's literally part of the learning process. Your brain is doing critical work during those hours.
What about other physical factors? I've heard caffeine can help with focus.
It can, in moderation. Huberman's protocol suggests that strategic arousal management helps learning. Light caffeine can narrow focus, and a brisk 5-10 minute walk before studying increases alertness. But the timing matters. Caffeine too late disrupts the sleep that consolidates your learning.
Are there other physical techniques?
Absolutely. For motor skills, using a metronome to pace difficulty helps tremendously. And Huberman recommends short idle time breaks, 1 to 3 minutes with your eyes closed doing nothing between practice sessions. This isn't being lazy, it's giving your brain time to consolidate what you just learned.
I've noticed I learn better when I'm fully immersed without distractions, but that's getting harder to achieve with notifications constantly pulling at my attention.
That's what Cal Newport calls deep work, the ability to focus without distraction on cognitively demanding tasks. It's becoming a rare skill, which makes it increasingly valuable.
How do we protect that kind of focus in our hyper-connected world?
Newport recommends several strategies. Batch communications into specific time blocks, create office hours for shallow tasks, and protect 60 to 90 minute blocks for deep learning. He also warns about attention residue. When you switch tasks, part of your mind stays stuck on the previous activity, reducing performance.
That explains why I feel scattered when I'm constantly switching between learning Spanish and checking email.
Exactly. Context switching is the enemy of deep learning. Even brief interruptions can set you back significantly. The research shows it can take up to 23 minutes to fully refocus after an interruption.
So turning off notifications isn't just about avoiding distractions. It's about protecting the neural processes that build skills.
Precisely. And this connects to James Clear's work on habit formation. The environment shapes behavior more than willpower. If your phone is face up beside you while practicing piano, you're fighting an uphill battle for attention.
Speaking of habits, I've tried to build learning routines before, but they rarely stick. I start strong, but fade after a week or two.
That's because we often rely on motivation, which fluctuates, instead of systems. James Clear's research shows that tiny, consistent actions beat heroic sprints every time.
I've heard about the 21 days to form a habit rule. Is that accurate?
Actually, that's a myth. Research by Lally and colleagues found that habit formation varies widely. The median time was 66 days, with some habits taking over 250 days to become automatic. The key isn't the specific time frame, but building what Clear calls habit stacking and environment design.
How does that work for learning skills?
Instead of relying on motivation, attach your practice to an existing habit. After I pour my morning coffee, I'll practice Spanish vocabulary for 10 minutes. Then modify your environment to make practice easier than avoidance. Have your materials ready. Eliminate friction points.
I like that approach. Small, consistent practice seems much more sustainable than occasional marathon sessions.
The research backs that up. Those small sessions compound dramatically over time, especially when combined with the retrieval and spacing techniques we discussed earlier.
Let's get super practical. If someone's listening and wants to learn a new skill faster, what exact steps should they follow for each practice session?
I love this question. Here's a science-backed protocol that combines everything we've discussed. First, define a specific, measurable win for today's session. Something small but concrete, like play this 8-bar sequence at 60 BPM without mistakes, or write a basic SQL query that returns the correct data.
That specificity is key. No vague goals.
Right. Then warm up with 2 to 4 minutes of light movement or box breathing to shift into focused alertness. Follow that with a quick retrieval quiz on what you learned yesterday. This wakes up the neural networks.
And for the main practice?
Work in focused blocks of 15 to 25 minutes, aiming just beyond your current ability. Let small errors happen, then correct them immediately. If applicable, use a metronome to pace yourself.
What about incorporating that interleaving technique?
Great point. Rotate between different sub-skills within your session. Don't wait until later. Even a simple ABC rotation builds the habit of selecting strategies rather than just executing them.
And then those idle time breaks Huberman recommends?
Exactly. Take 1-3 minutes between blocks to close your eyes and do nothing. End your session with a retrieval exercise. Explain what you learned out loud in 60 seconds or solve one problem without notes.
This is gold. It's like a complete blueprint for effective learning. Before we wrap up, I want to address something that trips many people up, the emotional side of learning. It can feel so frustrating when you're not making progress as quickly as you'd like.
That's where mindset becomes crucial. Carol Dweck's research shows that people with a growth mindset, who believe abilities can be developed through dedication and hard work, learn more effectively than those with a fixed mindset.
I've definitely caught myself thinking, I'm just not a math person, or I don't have a good ear for languages. That's the fixed mindset talking, right?
Exactly. And it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. The research shows that simply adding yet to those statements, I'm not good at this yet, changes how you approach challenges and setbacks.
So embracing the struggle as part of the process, not a sign of failure?
Precisely. And here's a powerful reframe. Mistakes aren't failures. They're the edge of your current ability. They literally mark where learning happens. Andrew Huberman calls this productive struggle, and it's where your brain builds new neural pathways.
That's so liberating. Instead of being embarrassed by mistakes, we can see them as essential signposts on the learning journey.
And remember, everyone who's mastered a skill went through that awkward beginning phase. The difference is, they persisted long enough to break through.
We've covered so much ground. Let's distill this down to the most actionable takeaways for our listeners.
First, define success specifically and break skills into subcomponents. Focus on the 20% that delivers 80% of results.
Second, test yourself constantly instead of passively reviewing. The struggle to retrieve information is where learning happens.
Third, space your practice over days and weeks and mix different problem types within sessions. This feels harder, but creates more durable learning.
Fourth, protect your sleep and manage your attention. They're not optional extras, but core components of skill acquisition.
And finally, build tiny, consistent habits around your practice. They compound dramatically over time.
This has been so enlightening. The science of learning is actually pretty clear, even if it contradicts what most of us were taught.
Absolutely. And remember, your brain is remarkably adaptable. Whatever skill you're struggling with, you haven't failed. You just haven't mastered it yet.
That's your daily dose of smarter from the Be Freed podcast. If your brain liked it, come back tomorrow. We've got more where that came from. I'm your host, Naya.
And I'm Jackson. Until next time, keep learning smarter.